current state here on WKAR. Welcome. I'm Mark Bayshore. It's been in the back of our minds for a few months at least to do the program live at the state capitol. And about 3 or 4 weeks ago, our plan mysteriously grew legs and it started walking. And after a lot of planning and coordination, we are here just to the north of the state capitol steps. If you have business at the Capitol building, be looking for us. We're live from noon till 1, Wednesday and Thursday. You may be hearing us here later on Wednesday or even on Thursday morning. We are back here live Thursday during the noon hour. And we are here in large measure because, of course, Michigan legislators have returned to Lansing after a three-month summer break. We'll be talking to several lawmakers this hour and again on Thursday to learn more about what lies ahead in this fall session of an election year. We welcome two reporters who've covered the state capitol for approaching 40 years. Between them, Kathleen Gray reports for the Detroit Free Press. Kathy, great to see you.
Hi, Mark.
And Rick Pluta is the Capitol Bureau Chief for the esteemed Michigan Public Radio Network. Rick, thank you for being here.
Glad to be here. And glad to be esteemed.
We understand that the Senate was busy here today passing a package of four bills involving self-driving cars. Kathy, you were there. What got passed?
The four bills will allow for testing of autonomous vehicles, which are basically driverless vehicles, on 122 miles of road in the state. It also opens the way to open the American Center for Mobility at the site of the old Willow Run Airport that will be a research and testing facility for autonomous vehicles. Michigan wants to be at the leading edge of this. They're the car capital of the world, and these bills are moving very fast.
Consensus in the legislature about this, Rick, or could these get hung up for some reason?
I mean, it's always possible that you could run into a speed bump somewhere, but you know, there is wide consensus, not just that this is important, but that it needs to be done quickly because Michigan is competing with tech centers in Silicon Valley, North Carolina, for exactly this kind of research and development. And this is really, you know, they've kind of got the research down. Now it's about the development. You know, Mark, we live in a car town, and you know, we have a couple of auto plants, you know, right here near us. And it's not unusual in Lansing to see some of the models out on the road before they hit the showrooms.
Right.
And so this would kind of do the same thing for these areas that Kathy was just talking about, that this is, you know, real life road testing of autonomous vehicles. They just have to get past, you know, among other things, the safety concerns that they get out there, that you know, this is going to be a reliable vehicle.
Well, even self-driving cars are apt to hit a speed bump, mm-hmm. I guess, is the bottom line there. Well, before we get any further into the fall agenda, the foremost topic today may be the beginning of confirmation hearings involving Heidi Grether, the Snyder
and the
administration's
end.
I'm sorry?
The beginning and
the beginning end. And the end. Well, that says an awful lot about what I was expecting to try to find out from you two. That selection has raised a lot of eyebrows, of course, because of her past affiliation with BP, the liberal group Progress Michigan, and the group Flint Rising has been here protesting the appointment earlier. What kind of confirmation, you already answered my question, I guess, I'll get Kathy's views on this. What kind of confirmation process do you anticipate?
Well, I think it'll be, she'll get confirmed easily, but I think it will be with some hard questions because there's some serious issues facing the Department of Environmental Quality right now. You've got the Enbridge line and up in the Straits of Mackinac that is a big concern, and with her ties to the oil industry, I'm sure that people are going to be concerned about that. There's also the Flint water crisis that the Department of Environmental Quality had some real serious problems with, and so that's going to be an issue that she's going to have to deal with.
Rick, do you think some of this more aggressive questioning may come from some Republicans, or is this going to be a real party line dynamic here?
It's going to be a one-hour hearing, and after that there won't even be a motion to approve or disapprove it, because in Michigan, unlike in Washington, that gubernatorial appointments take effect absent some action by the legislature rejecting them. So if they do nothing, it goes into effect, and that's what it looks like is going to happen. Democrats will have questions about Enbridge, about some environmental cleanups. I understand that Rebecca Warren, I said Democrats, it's a Democrat. There's only one Democrat on this
the
committee.
Senate Natural Resources.
Rebecca Warren of Ann Arbor, and she's going to have some questions about some some local cleanups, about timelines, not just what needs to get done, but when will it get done, especially when will, you know, when will we be able to guarantee the people of Flint that they have clean drinking water. But we should also point out that the DEQ is actually not in charge of the Flint response at this moment, that that remains with Keith Cray, who is currently, who is the once again
DNR.
Department of Natural Resources director, but who took over as interim director to try and sort of pick up the state's response to that, start restoring some faith in the department, and now it's up to Heidi Grether to sort of carry that ball the rest of the way. Restore faith, improve morale in a department that's been badly battered, and you know, move ahead on some other things.
Rick Pluta of the Michigan Public Radio Network, Kathleen Gray for the Detroit Free Press. We're looking ahead at the fall session here at the Michigan Legislature on the second day of activity back at the Capitol after a long summer break. This fall, Michigan voters will decide an awful lot of new members coming into the House. It's in the 40 range, guaranteed, I think, minimum new members. What's the mood in the House right now regarding this turnover?
I would say that, and I wouldn't just say in the State House of Representatives, but just in politics in general, that Republicans are feeling doomed and Democrats are feeling paranoid. That Republicans are looking at the top of the ticket.
That's not a pretty picture. Doomed or paranoid, choose your poison.
I know. You know that we can make a killing investing in sedatives right now. that they're looking at the top of the ticket, the problems that Donald Trump seems to be having in Michigan, wondering not just if that's going to be enough to tip the State House of Representatives from the Republicans to the Democrats, but could it cost them a congressional seat or two, even? So, Kathy?
Well, the House Democrats need nine seats in order to get the majority, and that's kind of a tough hill to climb. It's a possibility. I don't know if it's a probability, but
it's not a probability, but it's happened before.
Right.
And
right.
If you have a big wave election, and that's what they're really afraid of. And remember, we've got the continued unpopularity of Governor Rick Snyder, who is, you know, he's a Republican, and so there's that playing into this as well. On the Democratic side, like Kathy said, that they're seeing a path to finally having a seat at the table in Lansing, but it's a narrow path and a steep climb, and they're kind of going, and we're Democrats. There's still the possibility we can mess this up.
So there's the continuing dilemma on, do we stay in Lansing and push some things through, or do we maybe cancel some sessions so we can get our members back on the campaign trail? So I'm not convinced that we're going to be meeting the entire time that they're supposed to be in session. But that's still kind of up in the air.
Sure. There's a policy aspect to this session, but the politics of it was certainly that the Republican leadership didn't want to be accused of not showing up for work. And so this is a chance to kind of put the kibosh on that.
Kathy, what have you heard from Republicans? Let's start with the Republican majority here. What have you heard from maybe either the quadrant leaders or any other leadership official here regarding legislative priorities this fall?
Well, energy policy is a big a big urgent thing that they want to get done. I don't think it's going to get done though, because there's just too much discord on how to reform or rewrite energy policy in the state.
It's not just a fight between Republicans and Democrats. Republicans are not in agreement on how to move ahead with this. I think they're just trying to tee this up for the...
And remind our listeners what they're in disagreement about.
Do we have enough time?
it's a time issue.
They're in disagreement on energy choice, allowing competitors to take customers from utilities, guaranteeing utilities a certain customer base and predictability and how much power they'll have to produce, what should be done as far as energy efficiency. And then there are also groups that are saying that the state is going too far in relaxing standards for creating electricity from renewable resources.
Kathy, I know with regard to criminal justice reform here, which has already been dealt with for many months, really, without a whole lot of resolution, there's ongoing discussion of not delaying the release of inmates who have served their minimum sentences. This is one of the issues at the heart of criminal justice reform.
That's a hard one. It's called presumptive parole, it's passed the House with a wide bipartisan majority, but it's kind of stalled in the Senate, and it would allow, like you said, inmates to be released after they've served their minimum sentence. But Law and Order really does not like this. Attorney General Bill Schuette has talked very, very, very much in opposition to this. So I'm not sure if it's going to, I don't think it's going to get out.
Yeah, like Kathy said, it's not just a fight between Republicans and Democrats. This is a fight among Republicans, and it's pitted Republicans against Bill Schuette.
Rick, you emailed all of us earlier this morning alerting us that there is a group of local governments apparently planning to sue the state for tell us about this.
They filed this morning in Wednesday morning in the Michigan Court of Appeals, and $4 billion is the magic number. They say that's how much the state has been shortchanging local governments in revenue sharing payments under the Headley Amendment. They say that basically the state has been using a shell game, and not just recently, but for the past 20 years, to apply payments to local school districts, payment to charter schools, payments for Maine trunk lines to the revenue sharing cap, and basically they've been cooking the numbers to shortchange local governments. And if they win, then that means that, the decision is retroactive, that means that there's going to be some serious scrambling to do some budget rewriting next year.
Kathleen, give us your take on the straight ticket voting thing. This legislature that just sat down again here yesterday, and Governor Snyder signed into law a bill banning straight ticket voting here in Michigan. I think we became the 40th or the 41st state to do so, but it's been overturned in the courts, only to be taken up by Attorney General Bill Schuette, who wants the U.S. Supreme Court Supreme Court to decide the issue now. What's the broader sentiment in the legislature about straight ticket voting? Is this a party line thing, or is it more complicated?
Absolutely, it's party line. It passed with a Republican majority, not a single Democratic vote in the House or the Senate. Straight ticket voting has been going on for 50 years?
Oh, no, 125 years.
Oh, well, gosh. They have tried to repeal it twice already, or ban straight ticket voting twice, and the voters have twice said, no, we want straight ticket voting. Well, the legislature went ahead and passed it. There's a sentiment that this
benefits...
They
made it referendum proof, too,
right.
So that's not going to happen again.
Right. There's a sentiment that this benefits Democrats more than Republicans.
We got time for maybe one other issue that may come up this fall. What might come up that we haven't talked about?
You know, a lot of that will depend on whether or not Republicans retain control. That, you know, they'll be looking at this energy policy. They might make some feint towards, reforming the Freedom of Information Act. But if there is a switch from Republican to Democratic control in the state house, then it's Katie barred the door. Who knows what could come up?
Well, no fault, auto insurance and reform is always in the mix. But we just haven't allow that to pass. A big opponent of that is Oakland County Executive L. Brooks Patterson, and he's got his Oakland County delegation pretty well opposed to any to the reforms that are being talked about.
Well, we've set the table really nicely with a couple of really qualified people to talk about the upcoming fall session here at the Michigan Legislature. We want to thank Kathleen Gray of the Detroit Free Press and Rick Pluta, Capitol Bureau Chief for the Michigan Public Radio Network. Thank you.
Thanks,
pleasure, Mark.
It's Current State live on AM 870 WKAR. You might be hearing us later on 90.5 FM later on Wednesday or possibly even early on Thursday. Coming up, we will speak with representatives from the groups Flint Rising and Progress Michigan. Both are calling for Heidi Grether to be rejected by the legislature. They've been here at the Capitol today protesting her confirmation. We'll talk to them about why they believe that. That is coming up here as we continue our live broadcast from the state capitol. I'm Mark Bayshore. Legislative committee meetings are already underway this week at the Capitol. Yesterday, the Senate Judiciary Committee met to review a number of bills. Today, as we've mentioned, the Senate Natural Resources Committee will meet to convene a confirmation hearing for Heidi Grether. That's only minutes away, as it turns out. She is, of course, Governor Snyder's nominee to lead the Department of Environmental Quality. I'm joined now by the leaders of both of those committees. Senator Rick Jones from Grand Ledge chairs Judiciary. Senator Jones, good to see you.
Good afternoon.
And Senator Phil Pavlo, good to see you from St. Clair Township, Natural Resources.
Thank you. Thanks for letting me be part of this
Thank
today.
You for joining us. We've only ever spoken on the phone before, as it turns out. It's great to have you with us. Senator Pavlo, let's start with you. As we said, your committee is conducting the confirmation for Ms. Grether, the governor's choice to lead the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality. What's important for your committee to learn about Heidi Grether in this process, and what do you want to know?
Well, I want to know the background, obviously, but more importantly, the vision for the department going forward. I think the department is at a crossroads right now. There's a number of big issues challenging what is always a challenging committee to start with. So, you know, we're going to go through the process. I like the idea of having the Senate have this consent hearing, because I think it's important to learn more about what these directors are and, more importantly, what their vision is for the future.
Her nomination has generated criticism. I mean, her work history includes some time with BP America, where she was a lobbyist and a manager who ran external affairs during the Deepwater Horizon crisis. People wonder why someone with a history in the oil business should be in line to help protect the environment. They've got a point, don't they?
Well, I don't know. I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing. I think when you look at her career and the amount of time, I mean, she started out in the legislative staff here, understands the workings of government, and, you know, I would look at that as part of her resume that could add value to this job. I mean, more experience, the more seasoned people, the better understanding of, you know, our DEQ and energy is a huge issue in the state. So to have someone with that kind of knowledge, I think can be an asset.
You're not on Natural Resources, Rick Jones, but what do you make of this this issue?
You know, I'll certainly study the candidate, and it sounds like she's very credible with a lot of knowledge.
Does it concern you, Phil Pavlo, that a former oil company official could have a hand in the future of Line 5 at this rate?
I think what we have to look at is it has to be a substantive conversation. We got a lot of challenges. I mean, we have oil, we have gas. It's a big industry in Michigan. But I think at the very front of it has to be the protection of the environment, and we'll find that balance. I'm quite sure that over time the legislature has their role to play in it. We'll certainly do it. I've been on that committee for almost 12 years, and it's a very important committee. She's going to be applying really for a very important job, and there has to be an opportunity to work together.
Senator Jones, Michigan's been grappling with reforms to its criminal justice system, and that's where your committee here comes in. There's a couple of bills in your committee that pertain to human trafficking. Can you tell us about those? These are House Bill 5542, 5543, convictions for human trafficking. What would those bills do?
I believe those are the House bills that say if you were a minor when you were caught in the prostitution, that you would not be held as a criminal. You are a victim. And they passed out of my committee yesterday.
We have news to report then. So those House bills came to your committee and they cleared yesterday.
Absolutely.
Another bill impacts an inmate's chances for parole. And this affects people in prison serving life sentences. This would eliminate the veto power for successor judges related to certain parole decisions. What can you tell us about that?
Well, certainly the successor judges don't really want to have a role in that because they didn't hear the original case. So that'll be debated, and we'll decide whether or not they can be relieved from that duty.
We're talking about this session's legislative priorities in the Michigan Senate, where Republicans hold the majority. My guests are Senators Rick Jones from Grand Ledge and Senator Phil Pavlo of St. Clair Township. Senator Pavlo, you chair the Education Committee as well. There's been a lot of discussion over a proposal to make third graders repeat that grade if they don't measure up to reading proficiency standards. It passed the House last fall, October of 2015. It's in Joint Conference Committee now, if I'm not mistaken. Where is that measure now? What do you think its future is?
Well, we did some changes to the House passed version. The House passed version came over with just 57 votes, and I think one of the glaring things that weren't in there is the involvement of parents and teachers in that decision. And so we took a number of committee hearings to try to include, make sure that the parents have a role in that decision-making process. And I went back over to the House, and I was kind of shocked that there was a non-concurrence vote. It is in the conference committee now. It has been there since May. And, you know, we continue to work. We'll meet again this afternoon to try to hammer out some points of difference. But I think the important thing is we need to make sure that kids are ready to move up when they're moving up. But more importantly, the early intervention is something that we worked on very hard in the Senate to get this issue addressed when they're in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, so it isn't such a steep cliff in third grade. The key is prepare these students for success.
Now, I think I've got this right. We learned just a few minutes ago that the Senate passed a package of bills involving self-driving cars today.
Do we have
that right? Where did you come down on that, Senator John?
It was unanimous, bipartisan. We want Michigan to have the next science, the autonomous vehicle. They're going to try to do it in England and Germany. We want those jobs here in Michigan.
What do you think, Senator Pavlo?
Well, I agree with Senator Jones on that issue, and it's an opportunity to get a hold of an up-and-coming industry and make sure we got our dominance in that market here in Michigan. We've got the energy, we've got the technology, we have the skilled workforces to be able to do that, and we just need to get the environment right.
Now, help us out with the process here. Will that go to the House here now, or what?
Yep, it'll go over to the House, and I imagine they're going to take the same approach that we did and understand just how important that is for Michigan's future.
Back to education. Earlier this year, Senator Pavlo, we saw many Detroit public school teachers stage sick outs that closed about 60 city schools. Teachers were protesting all kinds of things, overcrowding, working conditions, state control. At one point, you were considering legislation that would make a sick out count as a strike, which public school teachers in Michigan are forbidden to do.
Right.
What's happened with that legislation? Does it still have legs?
Well, we introduced it, and I think it's still important going forward because we saw illegal strikes happening. The unfortunate part is we lost hundreds of thousands of educational hours for kids that were desperately needed in Detroit. It seems they just approved a contract here yesterday. So I think the idea of punishing kids for work stoppages is the wrong approach. And I still believe that we need stronger laws in Michigan to make sure we clearly define what a strike is, strike conditions exist. And the important thing is keep those doors open for the kids that deserve that education.
We talked about energy, the future of energy legislation here in the earlier segment, Rick Jones. What, just broadly, what's your view on the future of these energy bills?
We've got to make sure that we build the plants here in Michigan. I don't want the jobs. I don't want the plants leaving Michigan. I don't approve of buying energy from outside the state. We can't depend on that. We'll have brownouts and blackouts. I want those plants built here. Let's keep those jobs in Michigan.
What do you think, Phil Pavlo?
Well, I think we definitely need that investment. In my district, the St. Clair Power plant caught fire about a month ago and wiped the entire production out for several months. So we understand how critical power generation is to Michigan. Our jobs and our economy rely on it. And I'm kind of the guy that's leaning toward a little bit of choice and being able to allow the choice customers to be able to participate in some of those savings. So I think we got a little bit of work to do, but you know, I think sooner or later it's going to get done.
There's a really different landscape in the House than there is in the Senate this year with the elections. That doesn't impact you. It impacts everybody in the House. Talk to me more broadly for a second about just the mood in the Senate right now. Is it forward-looking? Do you feel stuck? What? How do you feel?
Not at all. The mood in the Senate is let's get it done. We're working on a lot of important things, and we will work right through the lame duck to get everything done.
What do you think, Senator Pavlo? What's the mood in the Senate right now?
Well, we're, you know, all hands on deck, and we're moving forward with our agenda. The House still has work to do. And, you know, I believe that as the House members are out talking to their constituents, they've got a great story to tell, particularly the Republicans. They can talk about hundreds of thousands of new jobs here. And, you know, it's every 2 years. It's part of the process. But we don't let elections get in the way of the work that needs to happen.
We were expecting a demonstration here, and it may still take place here, an apparent a die-in from the Michigan Coalition to Prevent Gun Violence, which claims that the legislature's been inactive on gun control issues. Are gun control issues on your agenda, Rick Jones?
Absolutely not. You know, all this group has to do is study Chicago. It's become the murder capital of the nation, and they have the strongest gun laws. It doesn't do any good.
Phil Pablo, any thoughts on that?
Well, there's always a conversation about limiting and restricting the Second Amendment rights of the people, and I'm going to come down on the second right and the Second Amendment rights and make sure that we make sure you still have that constitutional right. It's recognized, and any further restrictions on that are they're not going anywhere in the Senate.
I'd like to get your thoughts both on the presidential campaign here. Do you intend to vote for Donald Trump?
I certainly can't support Hillary after she let all those people die in Benghazi.
Is there something positive you can say about Donald Trump besides the fact that she's not Hillary Clinton? What do you like about the guy?
I have a huge amount of auto workers in my district, and they're all telling me, we're voting for Trump, we're tired of our jobs going to Mexico.
Phil Pablo, quickly, where do you stand on Trump and Clinton?
Oh, I'm 100% behind Donald Trump and can't imagine a scenario where we have a President Clinton, particularly with so many critical things that are facing our country right now, none any more important than the Supreme Court. We have one vacancy there and could potentially have two or three in the next 4 to 8 years. And, you know, I think that that's probably one of the leading considerations that people need to understand, because the entire complexion of this country can be changed in a few of those appointments.
You do hear the Supreme Court issue brought up frequently here. You're both busy people. We really appreciate your time. Senator Rick Jones of Grand Ledge, Chair of Judiciary. Senator Phil Pablo, Chair of Natural Resources and Education. Good luck to both of you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
I'm Mark Bayshore. We are live on AM 870 WKAR. You may be hearing our broadcast later on 90.5 FM, but we're live in front of the state capitol here at the beginning of the fall legislative session. And most of our interviews here today concern either legislation that may well be brought up here this fall or other state business. Coming up, though, in the hour, not everything this hour will involve the legislature or the state capitol. The Lansing Symphony Orchestra kicks off their concert season this weekend. Maestro Timothy Muffet is standing by to talk to us about that concert. Now, as we mentioned earlier, one of the most anticipated gatherings today involving state government is likely the beginning of confirmation hearings on Heidi Grether as director of the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality. Those hearings begin in just a couple of minutes at the nearby Farnham office building. Critics of Ms. Grether's appointment point to her former job as a lobbyist and spokeswoman for British Petroleum, BP. They say her ties to a big oil company should disqualify her from the post. Ms. Grether has said she wants people to wait and see how she runs the agency and that she intends to follow the law and follow the rules. Now, two people calling for Heidi Grether to be rejected by the legislature join me now. Nayira Sharif is an organizer with the group Flint Rising. Welcome, Nayira.
Thank you.
And Sam Englott is Deputy Communications Director for the Liberal Advocacy Group Progress Michigan. Sam, welcome.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
Nayira Sharif of Flint Rising, you oppose the appointment of Heidi Grether in your own words. Tell us why.
Well, the Flint water crisis is one of the largest public health disasters in the history of this country. And someone who's a former BP lobbyist is not in a position to, one, rebuild trust with the residents of Flint, Michigan, and residents around the state that they're going to actually change any of the policies that created the crisis. And she has a history of catering to the corporations, and we need someone who's an advocate for the people.
Sam Englott of Progress Michigan, what if anything, would you add to that?
Yeah, no, I would just echo what Nayira said. You know, in the wake of the Flint water crisis, you know, the MDEQ has come under a lot of scrutiny, even from the Flint Water Task Force, which was put together by Governor Snyder. They really laid blame for the crisis at the feet of the MDEQ. And so really, you know, we need a full-scale redo of how the MDEQ operates, and Governor Snyder choosing to pick a corporate oil lobbyist, like Nayira said, is not the way to rebuild trust. And really having somebody who profited from the oil industry for well over a decade, is not the person that you want holding that very industry accountable when we have so many issues like the Enbridge oil spill and the questions around Line 5.
Ms. Grether told the Associated Press, and I'll quote, "Who I am is a whole lot more than just my last job." She also said, "I would hope that folks would give me a chance to see how I actually plan to run this agency, what kinds of decisions come out of it, and how we make those decisions." What do you make of those comments, Nayira?
Well, she has not met with Flint residents, and all of the information that I've heard about her so far, she has no plans of even having any listening sessions with communities that have been negatively impacted by the MDEQ or other policies. So she doesn't know how the city Flint residents we're still using bottled water, and we're still we're living our lives with bottled water. The pipes have not been replaced. I don't know what a timeline for that is. There is a package of bills that's languishing in the State House called the Water is a Human Right Bill package. A lot of those things could be implemented via policy with the MDEQ. I don't know what the timeline for implementing any of those things to prevent another Flint water crisis is happening. And all of the information I've heard from her so far is not even addressing preventing another Flint water crisis.
There's another interesting feature here in play, though, Sam. You know, Keith Cray ran DNR for quite some time here during some very critical months. And we've been led to believe that he is really staying engaged with the Flint process. It'll be more him than it will be Heidi Grether. Does that give you any consolation, the fact that an experienced hand in the Flint water crisis is going to be staying on? And probably we're led to believe he may be more involved in Flint than she will.
Well, I think that's kind of part of the problem. I mean, one, like Naira said, I mean, the Flint water crisis is not resolved, so people really don't have faith in the state's response as is. So whether Keith Cray has experience or not is kind of besides the point. There's still a lot of mistrust, and people still aren't getting the resources in Flint that they need.
Keith Cray's not the former director of BP, though.
No, he's not. Heidi Grether, you know, she says, I'm more than my last job. You know, it's not like she spent a summer flipping burgers for BP. I mean, she spent over a decade lobbying for their profit interests. I mean, she had a vested interest in making sure that BP, which is a chief driver of climate change denial and pumping pollution into communities that causes things like asthma rates, she profited from that very industry. So, I mean, all we can take right now, because we know very little about her, is her resume. And what she has said is she's focused on fixing the PR of the MDEQ. But from what we know with the Flint water crisis and the Flint water task force, it's not just a PR issue. It's a culture that needs to change at the MDEQ, and we're not convinced that she can change it.
Well, that is on her agenda, though. All the same, she'll likely become the director here. We were led to believe a few minutes ago that this process will probably last about an hour. So you may not have much choice in the matter. What happened? What do you do, if anything, after she becomes director of DEQ?
Well, I think first it's, you know, it's kind of a sad state of affairs when we can look at something as critical as appointing, you know, the environmental watchdog, the head of the environmental watchdog agency, is supposedly a foregone conclusion. I think that's kind of a sad state of affairs in a Republican-controlled legislature and state government like this. I mean, this committee, the four Republican members have gotten nearly $65,000 in donations from the oil and gas industry. So it may be a foregone conclusion, but that means that doesn't mean we have to accept it, and we can't hold people accountable for making the wrong choice.
Have you raised another name? Is there someone else that you feel should get that job?
Well, you know, I think Governor Snyder has to go back to the drawing board. I mean, this is his appointment. He has to live with it, and we as the people are the ones who have to deal with it as well. But, you know, we need an advocate. We need a watchdog. We need somebody who's going to protect communities, public health, our air and water, not somebody who profited from the very industry that's destroying those same communities.
And I would like to add that these policies they impact most likely like communities of color, poor communities of color. So Detroit and Flint and in other areas around the state, this is going to last a lot longer than whatever her appointment is. This is going to impact generations of people.
Naira Sharif of Flint Rising joins me, also Sam Inglot of Progress Michigan. Naira, you alluded to your hometown a minute ago. You're a Flint resident. Describe the mood in Flint right now and the impact that the water crisis is having on you right here, September of 2016, right now.
Well, we're over 9 months in this crisis that has been acknowledged. Residents are still living their lives with bottled water. There have been a lot of meetings, but no action in replacing the pipes. There has been infighting with different levels of government, and people are just really resigned, and they feel like the state doesn't care about what's happening in our community, because we have people, their pipes are falling apart in their homes, their appliances are falling apart, they're dying because of the impact of the state's policies and their inaction, specifically the MDQ's inaction, and not raising the alarm and flat out lying to the EPA about what was happening in Flint. And Governor's Snyder's policies around the emergency manager law created like this whole climate. So we really need to have bold response from the state, one, to show that they're competent and capable of changing the culture of the MDEQ, not only the MDEQ, but the other state agencies that's going to be responsible for the recovery.
We want to thank our guest. Nayira Sharif is an organizer with the group Flint Rising. She is also a Flint resident. Sam Inglot, Deputy Communications Director for the Liberal Advocacy Group, Progress Michigan. Thanks for joining us. Good luck to both of you.
Thank you, Mark.
It's Current State, live in front of the state capitol here on AM 870 and 90.5 WKAR. We're coming to you live here until 1 o'clock on Wednesday. Then you may be hearing us later. On Wednesday or on Thursday morning on 90.5 FM. We'll be back at noon on Thursday with more news from the state capitol. Coming up, we heard from Republicans in the Senate earlier. To end today's show, we'll speak with Democrats in the House. Tim Grimmel and Sam Singh are standing by to discuss their priorities this legislative session. And our focus today and Thursday at the state capitol is state government in the fall legislative session, but not at the exclusion of everything else. This Friday at the Wharton Center, the Lansing Symphony Orchestra kicks off their 87th season. Joining me now, music director of the LSO, Maestro Tim Muffet. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
We got a little shower here that we're... it's helping cool us off a little bit, which I think
it's just adding to the humidity.
But the temperature is dropping a little bit. It got awfully warm down here today. Well, for this season opening concert, the LSO welcomes a pianist of worldwide acclaim, Jeremy Denk. Describe Jeremy Denk's style for us. Put it in some perspective for
sure.
us.
Well, Jeremy is a fascinating musician, and it goes well beyond his... I mean, he's a great artist at the keyboard, but he's also a wonderful communicator about music and a curious individual. And I think that's where he really has made a name for himself, is his ability to communicate and talk about music and think about music and share his excitement for music, and people really respond to that.
Is describe him as a player, though. Is he known as a superlative technician, a superlative interpreter, a both?
Well, I think there are no limits on the technique, and certainly his interpretation of his interpretive abilities are what really got him noticed on the concert stage. I think one of the things that really distinguishes him from me is his curiosity of repertoire. So he ventures out of the mainstream repertoire and into the fringe a little bit, and really genuinely explores some important American music like the Ives Concord Sonata. And so I think he's a far-reaching and broad-minded musician. Mm.
Well, the piece that Jeremy Denk will be performing with the Lansing Symphony is Beethoven's Fifth Piano Concerto, The Emperor. But earlier this week, that was not the piece. Mr. Denk originally was set to perform Ravel's Left-Hand Piano Concerto, but Ravel is out, Beethoven is in. When something like that happens, how do you prepare dozens of musicians for the program change?
Well... you get the word out really fast, and there's a little bit of scrambling.
A midnight rehearsal or two in there?
Well, we hadn't started rehearsing yet, so that was good. We had time to reconfigure our library and get the right music out for the players, so it all worked out okay.
In addition to the Emperor Concerto, the Lansing Symphony Orchestra's season-opening concert this Friday deals with late Romantic works, as well as another landmark bit of Impressionism, La Mer, Claude Debussy, The Sea. Music for orchestra, for our listeners unfamiliar with La Mer, tell us about it.
Well, the two pieces, La Mer is kind of one of the signature works of what is now referred to as Impressionism in music, and it's three movements that describe different aspects of the sea. The first one is from morning till night at the sea, and then another is the play of the waves. And so they're very evocative works that describe physical and emotional elements that we associate with something as extraordinary and complex as the ocean.
I've got to move my iPad out of the rain here. Yeah, we've got a little rain to be concerned about. This
rain was, and electronics don't go well together.
No, they don't. My iPad has never looked quite so pathetic here. Kevin Labrie's going to erect a little covering here for us. This is a season-opening concert this Friday. Does the symphony have to be whipped back into some kind of shape after the summer or not?
Well, these are... No. These are all professionals who have probably been working in the summer as well in summer festivals or playing in the area. It's not like the instruments go in the cases. And
yeah.
a working musician is always a working musician. So
Timothy Muffet of the Lansing Symphony Orchestra is our special guest here on Current State on AM 870 WKAR. You have the interesting distinction of heading the orchestras at two U.S. state capitals.
That's right.
The Lansing Symphony and the Baton Rouge
mm-hmm.
Symphony. A few weeks ago, of course, historic flooding affected Baton Rouge and impacted several musicians that play
yes.
under you. And on a GoFundMe website set up by the Baton Rouge Symphony, which you've also posted on your Facebook page, mm-hmm. you wrote, "They lost homes, vehicles, and belongings. Some have also lost their instruments. These instruments are the tools of their livelihood." Talk to us about your view of what happened through your musicians.
Well, it was a disaster for them. Fortunately, it wasn't a lot. It was the flooding in Baton Rouge was very interesting because it was so localized. So you can be in one part of the community and it wouldn't appear that anything had happened. And then mm-hmm. you're into another neighborhood, and it's obviously a disaster area. And so for our instruments, for our players who lost instruments or lost vehicles, they've also lost their livelihood. And it's we're just trying to help them with their own personal recovery.
After Friday's concert, some of the Lansing Symphony Orchestra players are not yet done with their weekend. There's a performance on Sunday from a different branch of the LSO, the LSO Jazz Band. Talk to us about the jazz band and how many members are in both ensembles? I'm curious.
Well, that changes a little bit, but it's a good representation. It changes from one concert to the next, but a good representation. And then Ron Newman, who directs the jazz band, is so well connected and highly respected in the jazz world of Michigan. He's able to get the very best of the best in for this group, and we're very proud of the jazz band and. They sound fantastic.
Were you? I want to follow up with one question on Baton Rouge, which I should have asked earlier. Here, were you anywhere near Baton Rouge during the flooding?
No.
Okay, so you just heard about it all secondhand.
It was in New York State at the time. Yeah.
Oh, okay. How open? Back to the jazz band. How open to jazz do classically trained, classically focused musicians tend to be? I imagine there must be some number of purists who wouldn't get near jazz, but there are others that are just a whole lot more open to it.
I think that attitude has changed over the decades. I think there was a time that was the case. But now the 21st century musician is really well-versed in all styles. If they don't even necessarily perform in that style, they have a familiarity and an understanding and a respect for all the musical styles out there. It was Duke Ellington who said there's only two kinds of music, good music and the other kind. And I think that's generally recognized here. And what's been interesting when you talk about those sort of attitudes is to watch how just in the last less than 10 years, how rap music is starting to come into the symphonic world. And today's living composers are writing pieces that incorporate rap into symphonic repertoire. And that's probably very similar to the attitudes we might have found towards jazz back in the middle of the 20th century.
the opening of the 87th season of the Lansing Symphony Orchestra Friday night at 8 p.m. at the Wharton Center. Guest piano soloist Jeremy Denk performing the fifth piano concerto by Beethoven, The Emperor. More information at lansingsymphony.org. I got to get a plug in here for Jody Knoll here while we're at
it.
Because as with all of the other LSO concerts, there's a preview conversation with WKAR's Jody Knoll before the concert. It takes place in the Jackson National Lounge right outside the Cobb Great Hall at Wharton. What does Jody talk about during these half-hour-long presentations?
Well, they're all different. And we feel so fortunate to have Jody with us. He is a great communicator about classical music, and he will give the concert conversation audience some background in the music, sometimes some background into the performers, and just basically information that will help them even greater embrace the program in a more powerful way.
Well, we wish you a fantastic evening on Friday, the first night of the 87th season for the Lansing Symphony Orchestra. Our special guest has been Maestro Timothy Muffett.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
We'll have you back before long,
I promise.
It's current state, live in front of the state capitol. The rain's let up a little bit, and everyone is happy about that. It was way too hot, and then it got way too rainy, so it's one extreme or the other here in front of the Capitol. A reminder that we will be back here at noon tomorrow on AM 870. You may be hearing this broadcast here later on Wednesday or even early on Thursday, but Thursday at noon we will be here in front of the state capitol. If you're down here, please be looking for us. We'll be talking with former House Speaker Craig DeRoche, who was at the age of 34, with the youngest Michigan Speaker of the House. Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly also scheduled to join us. Well, it's been a three-month break for Michigan legislators. Earlier, we heard from Republican Senators Rick Jonas and Phil Pavlo about what lies ahead this fall season. Let's hear from a couple of leading House Democrats. House Democratic Leader Tim Grimmel of Auburn Hills and House Democratic Floor Leader Sam Singh of East Lansing join us. Welcome back.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, great to be here. Thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks for braving the rain. You came prepared at least with a umbrella carrier. Not bad.
Absolutely.
Tim Grimmel.
And I would just say, I think we've got the worst of both worlds right now because it's still hot out and it's raining.
and the humidity is above 100% right now. We've heard a bunch of views about the fall session and what should take precedence here. The election in the House throws a wrench into this thing as to what might get done or what might not get done. How would you describe your priorities?
Well, in terms of just this three-week session and amount of time?
Well, for the rest of 2016, let's say.
Well, I think there are a few key issues. One is there's some important legislation sitting in the Senate that would reduce recidivism, and I'm hopeful that the House will take that up and pass those anti-recidivism bills. I think actually the Senate has already passed those out of the Senate and they're sitting in the House, so we should definitely act on that. The other two issues that I want to just touch on are we really need to revisit the roads issue. The roads package that the Republicans passed a year ago is really a joke. It's not going to fix the roads. It's not even fully phased in until the year 2021. I think every Michigan resident knows we've got to fix the roads now, not 5 years from now. And then we've got to do more to fix education in this state. The other big issue that I'm going to let my colleague Sam Singh talk about is the energy policy issue, which is hugely important, and energy is very vital to our state's economic future. Sam's been the point person on that.
It's not the first time you and I have spoken about energy. Where does energy legislation stand right now, and what are the chances of moving forward this fall on any of that?
Well, I think in the lame duck, we have a really good opportunity to look at a bipartisan solution on the energy policy. There has been some discussions that the Senate might potentially vote in 2 weeks on a version that might have bipartisan support with our Senate Democratic colleagues. What we're looking for is to expand the renewable energy standards, expand some of the energy efficiency, make sure that people can use solar energy on their homes. And if we can do that and make sure that we have a consistent amount of electrical opportunity for all customers, customers and make sure we can keep those prices down for the general public and for the business community, I think you can find a bipartisan solution. Unfortunately, in the House, there's been extreme elements who've not want to have that conversation, but we're hoping that the Senate Republicans will be a little bit more nuanced and work with our Senate Democratic colleagues to find a bipartisan solution.
Is the hang-up in the House, though, is that the renewable energy percentage, or is it something else?
Well, I think it is something else. There's a whole group of people who want to deregulate the entire energy system. You know, we toyed with that a number of years ago. It didn't work. It didn't work in California when they tried it. And so I think that part of the Tea Party wing of the House that has been, you know, screwed up the roads package, it really hurt the solutions, the bipartisan solutions for Democratic, for the Detroit public schools, are also hurting the energy policy. And my hope is it will have more of the centrist groups come around the table and just try to get this done, because it has been something we've been working on for over 2 years.
Tim Grimmel, you alluded, I'm sorry, you wanted to
well,
make
I,
another point.
I would actually add one other very important issue, and that's transparency and accountability in government. There is a package that's a bipartisan package that's been tentatively agreed to in the House to expand the Freedom of Information Act in Michigan to both the legislature and the governor. We're currently one of only two states in the entire country that don't apply the Freedom of Information Act to the governor's office and to legislators. We need to change that. We should be able to act quickly in the House to get that out of the House, and then hopefully the Senate will do the right thing.
There's consensus
and pass it as well.
There's consensus on that.
In the House.
Not so much in the Senate, then.
Well, I've heard mixed things in the Senate. I think what's important for people to know is that transparent governments are accountable governments, and they're more effective and responsive governments. And so the more we can make our government transparent, the more likely we are to avoid problems like Flint in the future, to avoid problems like the Grand Rapids Veterans Home, and make sure that government is responsive and effective and helpful to all people in the state.
Go a little bit deeper with us on your, you alluded to progress on education. Where's the opportunity here in late 2016 to move forward on that?
Well, and I don't know that we'll actually see this happen this year, but it's certainly very needed in this state, and that is we've got to make sure that all schools, both traditional public schools and charters, are held accountable for actual results and for improving education in the classroom. And right now, charter schools around the state have operated largely with impunity, where they really have not been held to the same standards, and we need to make sure that we're holding charter schools accountable, and we're shutting down those charter schools that are ineffective and doing a bad job.
And in addition, we've seen a report that has come out that the administration had put together on the based on pushing by the Democrats last session to say, what is the true cost of actually funding education? That report came out, and it showed very clearly that we are underfunding education at all levels all across the state. And if we really want to be competitive with states like Massachusetts and Minnesota that are having the higher test scores and the higher graduation rates, we're going to have to invest more. And unfortunately, that's just been sitting on the desk of the governor, and he hasn't really brought any legislative leaders together that I'm aware of to actually start that conversation. And even if it's a next year conversation, we should start that conversation now, because he's putting together a budget. And if he's not having those legitimate conversations, it means he's not taking seriously the investment that we need to be putting into our public schools.
We're talking to two leading members of the Michigan House, Sam Singh, the East Lansing Democrat, and House Minority Leader Tim Grimmel of Auburn Hills. It's been about 4 months since a Republican-led special legislative committee finished its investigative hearings into the Flint water crisis, and we're still awaiting the policy recommendations there. What recommendations need to happen here? Where are you at on Flint exactly?
Well, the most disappointing thing that's happened is that the Senate acted to appropriate money immediately last spring, some additional funds that are needed in Flint to address the humanitarian catastrophe there. And the House Republicans refused to take up that additional money until the coming fiscal year that starts October 1st. And so as a result, Flint has had to go with too little assistance for 4 or 5 months now that it could have been using to fix the pipes and deliver humanitarian assistance. And because of the House Republicans' refusal to appropriate that money immediately, that's not going to become available until October.
And in addition, you know, we do need to have a long-term solution for the health care needs of these children, the educational needs. This is a 20-year plan that we need to have a fund created that the legislature can't tap into in the future. And the fact that the governor hasn't proposed something is very disappointing. The fact that this committee didn't even interview the governor, interview key legislative leaders, was very disappointing to us. Made it almost seem like this was a show versus actually wanting to get down to what actually happened and who knew what when it did happen. And so we're still waiting for a legitimate investigation into what the governor's office did know about this, what the DEQ knew as well. And so, unfortunately, what happened in the Senate through that that committee wasn't something that was thoughtful in addressing all of the people that were involved.
Is the emergency manager law going to come back up again? Are you going to bring that up again?
Well, we already have. We have introduced a number of bills to either eliminate or modify the emergency manager law. I think it should be obvious to everybody that the emergency manager system does not work. It did not work with the Detroit Public School System. It did not work in Flint. And it has not worked in any community where it's been implemented. There's a reason why democracy is the best system of government in the world, and it's because people who are democratically elected to govern are more responsive to citizens. These state-appointed emergency managers don't have that accountability mechanism and have failed miserably.
You've both been outspoken in your support for allowing voters the straight ticket option, voting option. The decision of the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals made it likely that straight ticket ballots would be an option in November, but Attorney General Bill Schuette has just filed an emergency application with the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, to reinstate the ban. Do you think there's a chance his attempt could be successful?
In a word, no.
And I think it's unfortunate that this attorney general continues to waste taxpayer dollars. He's lost, obviously, every step of the way, and he knows that he's not going to succeed at the U.S. Supreme Court. They're not going to overturn this. And so why waste taxpayer dollars? Well, I've actually introduced a bill that would require the attorney general and his office to begin to count the hours that his appointees and his staff is spending on these partisan attacks, because it's at some point we have to know how much taxpayer dollars is this attorney general wasting. And he's been doing it on issue after issue that he's been going to the U.S. Supreme Court and losing time and time again because he wants to push a partisan agenda. I think it's despicable the way he's been using his office to push a partisan agenda.
There's 40 other states, though, that where straight ticket voting has also been banned. What do you say to people who say it works or it's acceptable in 40 other states? Why shouldn't it be acceptable here?
Well, in the other states, it's almost always been paired with allowing easier access to any reason absentee voting, any reason registration. So it's worked in some other states where it's been paired with legislation to make it easier to access the ballot that has reduced long lines at polling places. Unfortunately, that didn't happen here in Michigan. And so if this were to pass, it would almost certainly create much longer lines at polling places and make it much more time intensive and difficult to vote.
And I think just to add one last piece is, again, the voters have voted on this twice. There have been two other attempts by Republicans to remove this, and the last attempt in 2001 was put back by the voters. So, again, why is the attorney general taking something that the state has obviously voted on? It was Democrats, Republicans, and independents that supported it because it had over 60% approval. So why is he going against the vote of the people that occurred in 2001? That's something, again, that shows that he's continuing to waste these taxpayer dollars for a partisan agenda.
You're both up for re-election. Democrats need to gain 9 seats to win control of the House. What do you think your chances are, Tim?
Well, things are lining up very well for us. We've got great, hardworking candidates out there. Donald Trump is hurting Republicans down ticket. We know we're going to have higher turnout in the presidential year. And I think most importantly, people are fed up with one-party dominance in Lansing government for the past 6 years. People want some balance restored to state government, and Democrats winning control of the state House would ensure that balance.
I have been speaking with House Democratic Leader Tim Grimmel and House Democratic Floor Leader Sam Singh, Democrat of East Lansing, about the fall legislative session kicking off this week, as well as the Democrats' attempt to gain control of the House in the upcoming election. Tim Grimmel, Sam Singh, many thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Appreciate
for having
it. Us. Stay cool.
Thank you.
And that wraps up our program here live from the state capitol today. I'm Mark Bayshore. We'll be back on Thursday at 12 o'clock noon. You may be hearing this broadcast here again later today on Wednesday or first thing Thursday morning, but we'll be back live at noon with all kinds of special guests, Lieutenant Governor Brian Calley among them, and a number of others. We hope you can join us then. It's Current State on WKAR.